A judge denies a request in Texas to ban Syrian refugees. Just ahead, a closer look at the refugee experience here in Florida as we take your calls. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show always live at 9, and now catch the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Also, video on demand at tvjax.com. Just ahead, local immigrants and refugees speak out about their experience here on the First Coast as we ask you to weigh in, too. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, helping women break the cycle of the sex trade. It's a preview of ReThreaded's Valentine's Weekend event. Plus, music icon Alan Parsons on his show at the Florida Theater. All of that and more coming up this morning. But first, this hour, headlines and controversy about immigrants and refugees coming into this country catch our attention just about every day. We also learned this week that a U.S. judge has denied for the second time a request by Texas to bar relief agencies from bringing Syrian refugees into the Lone Star State. That's a decision that could have a bearing on the attempts of 30 other governors to block refugees, including here in Florida. What are the refugees' experiences really like? Let's hear it from themselves. You can do so tomorrow night as FSCJ presents its first Salon of 2016, a selection of TED Talks on the immigrant and refugee experience. Now, this event, titled Immigrants, Refugees, and Jacksonville's Muslim American Community, will feature a number of local voices. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Dr. Paul Henriksen, Assistant Professor of Speech Communication at FSCJ's Deerwood Campus. Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
Rana Abuljawad is here. She's a member of Floridians Responding to Refugees. Good morning.
Good morning.
And UNF Professor Parvez Ahmed with the Islamic Center of Northeast Florida. Good morning.
Good morning.
And a recent Pew poll finds a sharp partisan divide when it comes to the issue of refugees and Islamic extremism, with more than half of Republicans wanting blunt talk about Islamic extremists and concern about the danger they perceive of some refugees, while Democrats say that it's a mistake to blame Islam as a whole when you talk about this issue. What do you think about this? And we want your calls right now at 549-2937. Give us a call at 549-2937 or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us or weigh in on Facebook. Rana, let's begin with you. You're a member of Floridians Responding to Refugees, a Palestinian American. This event is coming up tomorrow night as we'll look at some TED Talks on video and also hear a live panel discussion. Well, what is hoped can come out of this Salon event?
I'm hoping that people in Florida and in Jacksonville specifically welcome the refugees and help in any way they can. I think given so much powers to the governance and Senate's proposing against refugee really doesn't fit what I learned to know about American values and what I learned to know about Jacksonville community. And I think highlighting the struggle that they're going through, I'm hoping that that will bring a lot of, positive results for the refugees here in Florida.
Paul Henriksen, this is happening tomorrow night at the FSCJ Deerwood campus. It's a TEDx event, so some TED Talks will be screened, video talks. What can we expect?
Well, what we see ourselves at TEDx across at all TEDx's, but at TEDx FSCJ, is responding to a national and international conversation, but then engaging the community right here. There have been so we begin with a couple pre-recorded TED Talks that are fairly well known by Anangiri Derridas, Indian American, and a Canadian Libyan, Alaa Morabit will be our two sort of framing the broader international and national conversation. But then we've got a really lively conversation that's taking place right here in Jacksonville. And so I just look to put together some of those voices and bring them together at our TEDx event.
Parvez Ahmed, this has become an issue here in Jacksonville. State Representative Lake Ray has filed a bill that would considerably tighten the state process for the screening of Syrian refugees. He cited the preamble to the Constitution as justification when he was pressed and said that his proposed legislation was unconstitutional. He argued and said, no, it's not. The preamble guarantees domestic tranquility, and that in the view of many Americans, I cited the Pew poll, concern about refugees and Islamic extremism is a threat to domestic tranquility. And so when we look at these Pew poll results and this partisan divide on this issue, how do you anticipate that to come up in this discussion Wednesday night?
Well, I think the partisan divide is very stark. When you look at the Pew poll, one of the questions that was asked is, you know, how should the next president talk about Islamic extremism? And the choices were be careful not to criticize Islam as a whole. And the other choice was speak bluntly, even if critical of Islam as a whole. Well, 50% of Americans agreed that we should be careful not to criticize Islam as a whole. But the real story is the internal numbers. On the Democratic side, people who are Democrats, who identify themselves as either liberal Democrats or moderate Democrats, almost 7 out of 10 want our president, want our political discourse to be very careful in not conflating Islam with the broader problem of violence in the name of Islam. While on the other side, on the Republican side, the number is about 2 out of 10 or 3 out of 10. So I think this needless politicization of a real challenge, not only in the broader context of religion and violence, but also in the narrow context of the Syrian refugees, is creating so much fear and paranoia in the society without actually allowing us as Americans to come together and solve a real problem.
In the midst of fear and paranoia, a sober and civil discussion Wednesday night, looking at the immigrant and refugee experience here in this community, happening at the FSCJ Deerwood campus. We want your calls, and we'll go to them in a moment at 549-2937. Rana, you mentioned a moment ago you wanted to make sure that refugees in Florida had their stories shared. Can you give us some examples of what you've heard and experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the Syrian refugee who actually became very close to me and my family. The entire family is misplaced. The husband and her daughter is in Jordan camp for the Syrians, and another son still in Syria. And she's still here, you know, trying her best to bring her family over. So there is no choices of if you don't choose, for example, to be part of a political or Assad regime that you're going to be safe. There is no choices. You're basically, there is no safe choice. They're going to be prosecuted regardless, and they're trying to flee a war and prosecutions. And some of the stories that she shared with me really had nothing to do with any political. There's no political agenda. They're not in any political group. They're just thinking that because they're not part of any political group, that they're going to be safe and they're not going to be harmed. But unfortunately, they were. And that's one of the reasons that she fled here to Jacksonville.
And Paul Henriksen, I mentioned Lake Ray. Lawmakers in other states have also given voice to fears that the Islamic State, which claimed credit for the attacks in Paris, will perhaps try to hide militants intent on carrying out more killings among the influx of refugees entering the U.S., this even though the federal government has tightened visa waiver rules for visitors following those attacks in Paris. Will this aspect of the discussion come up Wednesday night?
It will. Following up on some of the conversations that have been going on in Jacksonville, we are inviting Erica Curran, who's a professor at Florida Coastal and who I heard right here on Melissa Ross. And so she can tell us about some of the legal features at some of the other events here. There's been people who have walked us through the entire refugee process. So that will be part of the conversation. And I think when you hear how thorough the process is, that it is reassuring. I think part of, though, the other story here is to hear what individual stories. And so I think people, when we think about people globally who are very well known, Malala Yousafzai or Sharon Ebadi, both women, human rights advocates, and we can think of them confronting aspects of their religion that, well, are frankly not pro-women. If we hear those stories here, I think it's a powerful one that the ways in which faith, all faiths, can be used to promote human rights, not just to infringe on them.
And if you're just tuning in, do you prefer blunt talk about Islamic extremism or more cautious rhetoric? As we preview tomorrow night's TEDx Salon, immigrants, refugees, and Jacksonville's Muslim American community. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549 2937. Parvez Ahmed, what's your reaction to some of the Republican candidates for president drawing parallels to the run-up to World War II, saying that FDR was not afraid to call out Nazi ideology for what it was and did not tiptoe around his rhetoric? On the Republican side of the aisle, there has been this vociferous insistence that we call Islam extremism what it is. As you referenced in your mention of the Pew poll, the divide couldn't be starker when you listen to the Republican debates on this issue as opposed to the Democratic debates.
So I think there is a point where there is an agreement, actually, among Democrats and Republicans. There's a common ground that it would be helpful if politicians on both sides begin to address. So where is the common ground? In the same Pew poll, it was asked, in the U.S. today, is there a lot of discrimination against Muslims? 60% of American public says, yes, there is a lot of discrimination against Muslims. The same poll also asked the question, is discriminations against Muslims in the U.S. increasing? And 76% of the public responded that discrimination against Muslims are increasing. So here you have the American public, 60% to 76%, agreeing that there is a lot of discrimination and that discrimination is getting worse. So what does the president of the U.S. do? He visits the U.S. mosque to kind of begin to address this problem or begin to raise concern about this problem, the same way President Bush did right after 9/11. And for going to the mosque, visiting the mosque, he was needlessly attacked by the Republican. I think this is where we begin to see a disconnect between what the political rhetoric is and what the reality on the ground is. Americans are recognizing the fact that discriminations against Muslims is a problem and is a rising concern. And we need political leaders who can step up and begin to give voice to that concern and figure out ways to mitigate that problem.
Rana, tell us a little bit about your experience. You've lived in this country, you've lived out of this country, you've come back to this country.
I think there's a lot of misconceptions about my religion and a lot of myth. Unfortunately, there is a terrorist organization and group in every religion, every nationality and country and race. And to just generalize a whole, and especially American Muslim communities that are part of this community, part of this country, to generalize it and get prosecuted because of things that we actually don't approve. We have a lot of leaders and we have a lot of Muslim leaders and clerics that issued fatwa against hijacking our religion, against these terrorist groups. And I think that we're constantly being asked to condemn them. And I feel personally tired, as well as I'm sure a lot of Muslim Americans are tired of constantly condemning and explaining why we are not part of these groups and why we don't share the same ideology. But we continue to be asked to stand against it. And we have done that in the past in so many ways through our Muslim leaders and the Muslim community in general.
549-2937 to join the show. Here's a comment on our Facebook page. If America started banning people based on the violent acts of a sick, deranged few, then white men should be banned from crossing state borders and would need to be tracked. 90% of terrorist acts carried out in this country have been committed by white males. Blaming Muslims, Islam, and refugees is just a diversion from looking at our own country and solving our own problems. That's a comment on Facebook. Paul. The white male on this panel. Go ahead.
So I think it is good to be in the position of being in the minority as a white male, and I think it helps you to understand. And just in the last few weeks, I spent time speaking with Rana and some of our other panelists, and to hear other people's voices and to not be in the majority. And yet to feel invited in by all kinds of persons different from you. It's incredibly powerful and transformative. And beyond the headlines, you see the connections between people one-on-one. And I'm also glad to say that TEDxFSCJ is part of the college experience. My students have experienced that as well, learning about people unlike themselves. It's incredibly powerful. And here with Rana, you'll be challenged to keep it under an hour. She's got great stories to share. And I think just hearing those you know, really does give power to certain ideals of inclusivity, and that all persons recognize the value of human rights, and all faith traditions do that.
Let's go to your calls now. The number to join us, 549-2937, as we discuss tomorrow night's salon at the FSCJ Deerwood campus, immigrants, refugees, and Jacksonville's Muslim American community. We'll begin with Mitchell in Palatka. Hi, Mitchell. You're on the air.
Yes. Well, I enjoyed speaking on this particular issue. I personally think that the refugees should be let in to this country in much larger quantities, at least 10,000 a month, because they are in a desperate situation. Do I think that there is no danger? That wouldn't be true. There can be danger, but there's danger with every population of people everywhere. Do I think that Islam is correct? No, I don't. I'm a Baptist, and I'm glad for them to be coming, because if they come to this country, the Muslims, they're going to run into Baptists, and they're going to find that Jesus was crucified, and he was resurrected.
All right, Mitchell, thanks for the call. Parvez Ahmed.
Well, I mean, this country is a country of immigrants. We have always welcomed people of other faiths and other nationalities into this country. And it's a country that is founded on the principle of religious freedom. And that freedom includes for people to practice their religion the way they see it fit, and also for people within a religious group to preach their religion. So if Michelle and his fellow Baptists want to preach about Christianity, this country gives them the right to do that. And for Muslims to hear that, and it's their choice whether they want to accept his message or stay with their own tradition.
And let me ask you as a follow-up. Tonight's the New Hampshire primary. Republican frontrunner Donald Trump projected to win that primary in large part because not only has he talked about building a wall on our southern border to keep out Mexican immigrants, he's talked about banning all Muslims from this country. Those themes have resonated quite positively with a substantial portion of the Republican base. And so as you prepare to hold this event here in Jacksonville tomorrow, how will that aspect, the 2016 presidential race and these themes of immigration and what to do about immigration, how to deal with the issue of terrorism and religious extremism. How will you grapple with that as you continue this discussion?
Well, I think there is a real fear. So the fear is real. So politicians, public officials have to acknowledge that the fear is real. But the question is, how do you address that fear? Do you address that fear by simply agreeing and playing into the stereotypes of vulnerable minorities? Or do you take positions to correct some of the perceptions? For example, the fear about Syrian refugees or refugees in general is not borne out by facts. Refugees have not committed any act of violence in this country. By and large, they are very peaceful and they are integrationists. Also on the other side, when you look at it, if ISIS or Daesh wants to come to this country to harm us, which they fully intend to do it, I think using the refugee route to come into this country is probably the least likely of all of the routes. So if the big elephant in the room, Donald Trump's idea of banning all 1.6 billion Muslims from coming to this country for either trade, commerce, cultural exchanges, education. Have people thought about what's the domino effect of that idea? Would that also mean now Americans will be stopped in visiting 56 Muslim majority nations in this world? What will it do to trade and commerce? What will it do to global economy? So this is not only and pardon me for saying this, a stupid idea. It is an idea that will devastate not only our country, but the global economy.
Carrie is in San Marco. Hi, Carrie. Good morning.
Yes. I have no problem with immigration as a descendant of immigrants. The more we mix all people and all races, I think that's the long-term road to peace. But having said that, I only have one worry. And that is the separation of church and state, that the Christian Orthodox folks in this country are exceedingly trying to ruin the separation of church and state. Will the addition of another religion that has come from worlds where there was no separation take us back in that regard. And that would be my only concern. But I'm not worried about refugees at all.
All right, Carrie, thanks for the call. Rana.
There is separations between religion and state, and I think a lot of the media amplifies the Sharia law that's practiced in Saudi Arabia and Iran as the way that's practiced everywhere in every Muslim country, and that's a myth. You know, the Sharia law is completely that is practiced in Saudi Arabia is not what these refugees are bringing, or not the what the Muslim American community is bringing. Here, basically, we understand the law that's in the U.S. and we abide by them. And I think the only thing that we're asking for is to also have the freedom to practice our religion safely, and also, you know, have respect and dignity like any other immigrants or any other religion. This is a melting pot, and we don't have just Christianity. We have Judaism, we have Buddhists, we have Muslims. So I understand the fear, but at the same time, we need to understand that this is a melting pot.
And, you know, the Paris attacks certainly caused great alarm. But then following upon the Paris attacks, the attacks in San Bernardino, California, really ratcheted up this rhetoric and this fear, Paul Henriksen, because the couple that carried out those attacks had been in this country for some time. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that couple, they weren't refugees.
Right. If you look at you know, take a fact-based approach to stopping acts of violence. Looking at the color of one's skin or one's religious faith is not going to be a good indicator. And we look at the times where we can say, here's a proud moment. We can think after 9/11 when a Republican president embraced persons of all faith in this country. And I think that's the right step. And when we try to make decisions about enforcement, based on principles that violate our values, we're wrong on the morality, and I think we're also wrong on the practical side as well.
John is in Mandarin. Go ahead, John.
Yes, thank you very much for accepting my call. I born overseas in Muslim country, and I highly suggest for everyone, we can't be in la-la land here, or we actually look at reality, just read Quran. You know, almost every mosque overseas, they do not like U.S. They don't believe what we have. They want to destroy us. And why do we want to bring people here that they don't understand culture? Even myself was brainwashed for so many years, but learned being here, you know, that that's not what we're all about. So I highly suggest read that, you know, and understand what religion is. Then we can have a real discussion about it. Instead, just to sit down and talk about what we think. Thank you very much.
That's John in Mandarin.
So, Melissa, if you look at a Pew poll that was done several years ago now, it was a survey about the American Muslim community here. And it suggested the top line results were that the American Muslim community is just as American as any other community. In fact, the rate of education, the rate of integration, the rate of civic engagement in the American Muslim community is among the highest of all faith communities. In fact, more Muslims in America identify as Americans first than Christians who identify as Americans first. And that's a startling result. It's a counter perception result. The perception is that Muslims are isolationist. They are trying to isolate themselves in this country, establish Sharia law. But there is no fact-based evidence to that. There may be a small minority of people who are doing that, but that minority of people exist in all faith traditions who are trying to isolate themselves or advance their very parochial understanding of their religious ideas. And so to conflate what Muslims in other parts of the world are doing with Muslims living in America is the essence of stereotyping. We don't look at Christians living in Nigeria or other parts of the world and look at their behavior to conflate that with Christians living over here. And we should not do that with Muslims. You know, every community, every faith-based community in America has its own distinct identity, has its own distinct prerogatives, and we should take a careful look at what that community practices, how that community integrates and lives with other communities. And we should use those facts to judge that community, not by looking at stereotypes of what certain groups of people are doing in certain parts of the world.
Just a preview of tomorrow night's TEDx FSCJ Salon, Immigrants, Refugees, and Jacksonville's Muslim American Community. This is at the Deerwood Center on Old Bay Meadows Road. It begins at 6:30 p.m. Thank you so much, everyone, for being with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you.
Paul Henriksen, Assistant Professor at the FSCJ Deerwood Campus. We were also joined by Rana Abuljawad, member of Floridians Responding to Refugees, and UNF's Parvez Ahmed, all in studio this morning. And much more still ahead later. Don't miss it as music icon Alan Parsons joins the show. A preview of his Wednesday concert at the Florida Theater. But up next, local nonprofit ReThreaded is celebrating Valentine's Day. All the sweet details right after this.
Diversity is top of mind among a lot of college students nowadays. Faculty, recently, too.
Talented minority faculty are not unicorns. They're there. It just depends on where you're looking. You have to look.
I'm Kai Rizal. College, diversify yourself. That is next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
When it comes to redeveloping downtown Jacksonville, the best-laid plans have often turned sour because of spiraling costs or problems with infrastructure. But despite setbacks, the city has made strides in recent years. In Community Thread Downtown Developing, we talk with the movers and shakers who are transforming downtown and meet others who say challenges still remain. Log on to wjct.org/events/community-thread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be part of our studio audience on February 11th.
New Hampshire voters have lined up in the snow to hear the pitch from presidential candidates. Just a week after the Iowa caucuses, it's the first in the nation primary. Donald Trump hopes to bounce back among Republicans. Bernie Sanders hopes to notch his first win with the Democrats. Whatever happens, we'll bring you the story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
WJCT and the Florida Theater are proud to bring me, Michael Feldman, and my show, What Do You Know, to the Florida Theater in Jacksonville on February 20th. We'll do the quiz, have some fun, enjoy the southern winter just a little bit. You bring the sunshine, I'll bring the sunscreen. Tickets available now at the Florida Theater box office by phone at 904-355-2787 or online at floridatheater.com.
Sponsored in part by Folio Media House.
Welcome back. They are the groundbreaking local nonprofit offering freedom to some of the most vulnerable people in the world, women and girls caught in the horrors of the sex trade. You can help break this cycle of prostitution, drug addiction, and human trafficking by supporting ReThreaded this Valentine's Day as they help women sew a new story. Their annual Mukti fundraiser is happening this week, drawing more than 300 leaders from the Jacksonville community to enjoy an evening of shopping, dining, and dancing. Now, this event is so popular, it's actually sold out. But founder Christian Keene is here now to tell us more about special pop-up shops and other great ways you can support ReThreaded just in time for Valentine's Day. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you. You're sold out.
We're sold out.
I don't need to sell a single ticket for you because you are kicking butt all
yes.
over the place.
And it feels good. I will tell you, it feels good. We are so excited to – it's sold out, so now we can really concentrate on giving – other people opportunities to participate in participating in Freedom of Women. So we have tons of different ways to get involved this week. So we want to be able to give people a chance to have a meaningful Valentine's Day.
That's right. Now, the event, of course, will feature Mayor Curry and his wife, former Jaguars quarterback David Garrard, and other local celebrities. If people that don't have tickets to that can still support Rethreaded, yes, because you're going to be having pop-up shops.
We're going to be pop-up shops, yeah. On Thursday and Friday, we're going to be at the Wells Fargo lobby downtown and at the Jesse Ball DuPont Center. So anyone who works downtown, we're going to be there. You can pop up. We're going to be at the Natural Life in St. John's Town Center. On Saturday, we're going to be at Orange Theory Fitness. So we'll be all over the city.
Which Orange Theory Fitness?
Oh my gosh, the one off of San Jose.
Okay.
Yes. And the cool thing about it now is we're also going to be delivering flowers. So we're going to be taking our centerpieces that are tulips, roses, and you can buy them online and have them actually delivered to your house on Valentine's Day.
And if you go to rethreaded.com, you can learn more about the incredible products Rethreaded has that you can buy for your sweetheart or a friend or your mom or your sister, anybody, this Valentine's Day. And the business model that you've developed, Kristen, is so extraordinary. For those that aren't familiar, let's explain once again what Rethreaded does.
So we're trying to give women just a second chance at life. So we are a social entrepreneurship that employs women in our company, and we just give them a chance to be who they're created to be. And they actually work in our company. So a woman can work in marketing, finance and admin, sales, production, or inventory, and get training and build up her resume, build up her confidence again, and then go out into the world. And we want to see the cycle be broken.
Since you've started Rethreaded, there's been quite a bit of growth. You've had a nice trajectory upward,
yes,
which is really encouraging.
Yes. We've had at least a 40% sales increase every year. Last year we had our sales were 60% sales, 40% donations. Right now we employ 8 women in our company. We want to employ up to 12 this year. So we are on an amazing, amazing growth curve. It has been so exceptional. Amazing. I still can't believe it sometimes.
I have one of your Grace scarves. It's made from old T-shirts. Mm-hmm. So you upcycle products. You take old things, make them new again. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice symbolism. And the message is so powerful. And helping women start over in this manner is so, so impactful. But as we said, the big Valentine's Mukti event is sold out. Mukti means freedom, right?
Freedom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is sold out. If you don't have a ticket to Saturday night's event, check out one of the pop-up shops, because that's an opportunity to buy one of these really cool products that Kristen's staff has put together. Again, you said Jesse Ball DuPont will have them, the Wells Fargo building downtown on mm-hmm. Thursday and Friday, and a couple of other spots.
Yes. Natural Life at St. John's Town Center on Thursday, and Orange Theory Fitness.
Wow. Well, happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you so much.
And kudos once again.
Thank you.
Again, the website is rethreaded.com. The perfect Valentine's Day gift can be found through Rethreaded. And music icon Alan Parsons is up next. Back in a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, Joel Grey. He originated the role of the MC in the 1967 Broadway production of Cabaret. He's written a new memoir about his career and about being gay and closeted. He fell in love with an actress, they raised 2 children, and then divorced. Only recently did he publicly come out. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Big day at the job. Make it break time. They're all waiting for you right now in the conference room. Well, they're going to have to wait, because you're not leaving the radio until you hear the end of that story. Snap Judgment from NPR. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Welcome back. Well, there is still time to reserve your spot for the great First Coast Connect treasure hunt up on Jekyll Island. Be sure to join travel expert Judy Wells and me at the brand new Seaside Westin Hotel on Jekyll. It's along the beautiful Georgia coast. Friday, February 19th and Saturday, February 20th for a wine tasting, gourmet meal and breakfast the next day, and Saturday Beachcomber Scavenger Hunt for the famous Jekyll Island Glass Globes. They've become a beloved island tradition. You will get an ocean view room for two nights, a welcome wine tasting, the treasure hunt, the three-course dinner, and breakfast, and the Westin's going to donate a little something back to WJCT so you can support public radio when you buy this package. Judy and I will host all meals and lead the treasure hunt. We really hope you'll join us because it's going to be so much fun. You can get all the details at Judy's website. Just go to wellsworld.net. Well, 11-time Grammy nominee Alan Parsons will perform his greatest hits tomorrow night at the Florida Theater. It's a special concert event as the Alan Parsons Live Project performs on stage with the Jacksonville Rock Symphony. I spoke with Parsons about his incredible career in music. Alan Parsons, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks. It's a pleasure to have you and lots of excitement. You'll be bringing the Alan Parsons Live Project with the Jacksonville Rock Symphony to the Florida Theater. This is a real treat. There are a lot of moving parts to this show, as I understand it. Can you give us a quick preview into everything that the audience is going to be able to experience?
Well, of course, it's always a thrill to have an orchestra behind us. I mean, we do a lot of shows purely, as a rock show with a seven-piece band. But this is the seven-piece band and the full symphony orchestra, so it should be a great show. We've done a few of these, particularly in Florida, interestingly. But this is, I think, the first time at this venue with the orchestra. So I'm looking forward to it greatly.
Absolutely. And of course, you're so famed as a studio musician. I think people really look forward to seeing you perform live. It's not something that you typically did in the past. What's it like for you to get out in front of a live audience?
Well, you rightly pointed out, I mean, you said studio musician. I'm more of a backroom boy, really, more of a producer and engineer. In the mid-90s, I decided to assemble a band with encouragement from some of the band members that had played on all the previous records. I've become more involved in live shows in recent years. I used to be pretty much just the rhythm guitarist and a few backing vocals, but, I've started to sing more now, and I'm enjoying it. It's still fun, and it's good to keep the Alan Parsons Project catalog alive by doing these shows.
Now, for some younger audiences, they first became acquainted with you, of course, from the pop culture reference in an Austin Powers film. Do you still get asked about that even now?
Arguably, my greatest screen moment. It did an enormous amount of good, actually. Yes, it did. It did introduce my name to a few people. So.
And I have heard that Mike Myers is in fact quite a fan.
I had heard that. We never met through the movie, but which saddens me that we didn't actually ever come together. But it would have been fun to work on the movie and done some music or whatever, because the soundtrack did really well. I mean, I would have really liked to be the part of it, but of course I didn't make a penny on the movie as things now stand.
Well, it is a pleasure to speak with you, and hopefully we'll have good weather for your stop in Jacksonville. Alan Parsons, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes.
Oh, hey, you're very welcome. See you at the show.
I am high in the sky. Look
That is music icon Alan Parsons. Catch him tomorrow night with the Jacksonville Rock Symphony at the Florida Theater. That's tomorrow night. And we are back in a moment.
Follow what's happening at WJCT even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
I'm Catherine Burns, one of the hosts of the Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us here on 89.9 WJCT. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you, and you'll even find yourself retelling them. Listen Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on 89.9 WJCT.
When it comes to redeveloping downtown Jacksonville, the best laid plans have often turned sour because of spiraling costs or problems with infrastructure. But despite setbacks, the city has made strides in recent years. In Community Thread Downtown Developing, we talk with the movers and shakers who are transforming downtown and meet others who say challenges still remain. Log on to wjct.org/events/community-thread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be part of our studio audience on February 11th.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, this is a really unique idea for your Valentine's Day weekend, a chance to see celebrated silent film star Buster Keaton on the big screen in the 1924 classic Sherlock Jr. Now, you're going to take in this movie while hearing an incredible accompaniment by John Fenstermaker, an organist who's acclaimed for his accompaniment of silent movies. The Jacksonville chapter of the American Guild of Organists is presenting this special event with the organ music. This is the way audiences went to see the movies before talkies came along. Patricia DeWitt is with the local chapter, and she joins us now with a preview. Good morning to you.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, it's so good to see you. This is really exciting, a silent film with organ music. You're doing this at the Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church. This is really going to take people back to almost 100 years ago when people went to see the movies in the silent era.
That's right. As we understand it, in a small town, they might be accompanied by piano. In a little larger town, they might be accompanied by organ. And actually, the theater organ was inspired by the need to have exciting and varied and very colorful music to accompany the silent films. And we don't have a real theater organ in Jacksonville, but the Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church has an excellent instrument that has lots of orchestral color to it, and Mr. Fenstermaker will make lots of use of this.
It'll be really dramatic.
It should be very dramatic.
Now, and he's coming up from Central Florida. He's renowned for his ability to do this.
That's right. That's right. That's why we're bringing him in. He's already come one time to practice, so he'll be ready to go.
Now, Sherlock Jr. came out in 1924, stars Buster Keaton, Gene Haves, Catherine McGuire. It is listed, it's preserved, by the way, by the Library of Congress as historically significant and listed as number 62 by the American Film Institute as one of the funniest films of all time. How about that?
That's wonderful. Well, that's one of the ones that that Mr. Fenstermaker suggested because of its dramatic quality and because it's got a story within a story. And Sherlock Jr., it's not a little kid. It's the dream of the projectionist who starts out the movie and is trying to win the favors of a woman. And he's got a lot of competition and skullduggery and betrayal and this and that and the other thing, and train chases and people jumping off of trains. Very exciting, actually. I read that Buster Keaton injured himself during this film. It was one of the rare occasions when that happened, that everyone did their own stunts in those days.
Sure. They were roughing it. Mm-hmm. And now you're an organist, Pat. What is it about the sound of the organ specifically, do you think, that makes this experience so special? Because people think of the organ these days as just being church music, but this is taking people back to a time when the organ was used in other settings.
That's very true. And in church music, you don't, the organ is capable of a lot of different colors and a lot of different dynamic levels. It can be anything from just a whisper to actually very, very loud, loud enough to hurt your ears if it went on long enough.
Right.
And I know that in Hendricks Avenue, they have a brass stop that's, we call it a reed stop. It's a trumpet, and it sticks out from the wall, and it will probably part your hair.
Now, are you excited to meet this guy, John Fenstermaker? Is he renowned in the organ world?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. And in this particular, people tend to specialize in different ways, although most concert organists can improvise to some degree. But if you're a specialist, you can really interpret. He's going to interpret the action for the audience.
And when I heard about this event, I never even knew that there was an American Guild of Organists. You're with the Jacksonville chapter. Tell us a little bit about this organization.
That's correct. Well, some of our purposes are to advance the art of organ music and to offer support, actually, to organists. Many, Jacksonville is just full of churches with an organist, and people tend to take these people for granted. In fact, the other day, someone told me they were surprised to learn that that person got paid.
Oh, what about you? Where do you play?
I'm retired now. I substitute in several churches, and that's a good role, too, because everybody needs a vacation sometime.
Yeah.
You can go in and learn about different churches and get to know different people.
Who taught you to play?
I studied with Willis Bodine at the University of Florida.
Wow. So how long have you been playing the organ?
Well, in my case,
don't want to say.
A lot
long
of
enough. Yeah. Well, now, there are still tickets available to this. This is coming up Friday night at the Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church. There will be a post-film reception as well. This is sort of a romantic kind of idea, I think, to take a date for Valentine's Day. It's so unusual.
Now, we hope that it will be, and we would actually like people to dress in period costume, which
oh,
is not
nice.
That difficult. All you need is the men can wear a tux if they have one, and the women can wear a straight dress with a belt around the hips.
You want a flapper look.
Flapper look.
And you want the men in black tie, really.
It would be really nice.
You want tuxes.
Yeah, we'll let you walk the red carpet if we had one. We're looking for one.
Oh, there's no, you need a red carpet. So anyone within the sound of Pat's voice, if you've got a spare red carpet just to donate to the organists, you need to get it rolled out by Friday night at the Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church. Of course, it's on Hendricks Avenue because this is such a cool event. What a unique Valentine's Day date you could take your sweetheart to see. The silent film classic Sherlock Jr., starring Buster Keaton. This came out in 1924. There will be organ accompaniment by organist, renowned organist, as I've learned, John Fenstermaker. Again, this is Friday evening, February 12th, 7 p.m. at Hendricks Avenue Baptist. Get a red carpet over there. Help Pat out. Wear your period costume. Wear your flapper dresses and tuxes. See the movie and then be part of the reception afterwards. It's romance, comedy, intrigue, and betrayal, and thrilling organ music. Did I miss anything?
I don't think so. If possible, we would like to have advance reservations. It helps us with the refreshment.
Oh,
and
yes.
A
yes.
Phone
so,
number?
Yeah, give them a call at 460-5584. People in this town are notorious for not reserving their tickets in advance,
that's
as
okay.
You probably know. But try to help them out and get your tickets now. 460-5584 to go see the silent film classic Sherlock Jr. with organ accompaniment. This is Friday night at the Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church. Organist Pat DeWitt with the local chapter of the American Guild of Organists here to share this with us. Sounds really cool, and we thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me on.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Our podcasts are up daily at iTunes and Stitcher, and watch the show video on demand at tvjax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, FBI data suggests there was a slight uptick in violent crime in the first half of last year, but overall, violent crime rates in the U.S. have dropped dramatically over the last decades. What's led to the long-term decline, and why do some say it's likely to continue? That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.